welcome back to Write Damn It with me, Zoe Richards, your host. This is the podcast for writers of all kinds who maybe get stuck with your writing. This podcast will help you get unstuck and help remotivate you so that you get the writing done. Episode 87, and in today's episode, we are going to talk about catching ourselves out. What on earth do I mean, catching ourselves out? Right, I want you to think about what is it that you say to yourself about your writing? What is it that you do in relation to your writing? What's the beliefs that you have given yourself? And are some of those beliefs possibly limiting beliefs? Okay, so let's start off thinking about catching ourselves out with some of the thinking that we're adopting. Do you ever find yourself telling yourself that you can't write? If you've never found yourself doing that, you are unique. Every writer I speak to says that there is some time where they decide they can't write. Tell you what, a couple of weeks ago, I was having exactly that conversation with myself. Who on earth do I think I am? I can't write. I'm a fool to think I can write. I read a section of Garden of Her Heart to myself and it was like, oh, this is complete rubbish. Everyone who's going to read it is going to tell me it's complete rubbish. This is where that little devil of a what do you call it? Devil of a thinker? Devil of a side to ourselves? It's the evil twin that grabs hold of our thoughts and tells us this is a truth. This truth exists that you can't write, that you can't write as well as everybody else, that you never should have even started to try and write anything at all. This evil twin of ourselves, I like to think of it as being, I've got the devil on one shoulder and I've got the angel on the other shoulder, and both of them are whispering into an ear. And those two lots of thinking, those two lots of talking into my head take over. But guess what? And I'm sure I'm not alone in this one. The devil's voice is always louder than the angel voice that is going on in my head. The other thing as well is that I find myself accepting the kinds of thoughts that are rooted in stuff that happened to me when I was a child. My mum had this habit where she would read our homework. If it wasn't good enough, she would rip it out of our homework book and we had to start again. And at times I do that kind of thing of thinking what I've done is just not good enough. It's going to get ripped up. Somebody's going to think it's complete and utter dross. So I want you to start off by noticing what are the thoughts that you're having, particularly what negative thoughts are you telling yourself? I do want you to notice anything positive you say as well. Now, when you've done that, the next thing to do is to think back to a time when you think maybe that was the first time that you said that to yourself, or the first memory you have of somebody else telling you. I actually believed for a long, long time, in fact, such a long time, it would be from when I was 9 years old until I was just turned 62, hint, hint, this year, that I believed I couldn't draw. And it's all thanks to Miss Greenwood, who laughed, yes, laughed, when she saw the results of my homework, which was to draw a scene of spring. It must have been around Easter time, I guess. And so I had to draw a scene of spring. And next door had a tree in the front garden that I absolutely adored. It was a cherry blossom tree, but it was quite unusual because it was a weeping. So, you know, the kind of thing where it's branches fold downwards, and so it was a weeping cherry blossom. So I showed her my homework and I felt quite proud of my homework, and Miss Greenwood laughed and said to me, trees don't grow like that, and had the rest of the class laughing at me too. Or at least my memory is that she had the rest of the class laughing at me too. I may not be 100% correct with that. And I say that because this is what happens with our memories. We distort the memories we've got. We delete the reality of what actually happened and we generalize. This is absolutely common that we will distort, delete, and generalize. And then we go and believe these distorted memories, and we believe the deleted scenes that we've got. So we believe what's left rather than the accurate part of the deleted scenes. Do you know what? There might have been some of my friends in the class who said, "But I thought that was a good drawing. I've deleted it. If that actually existed, I have deleted that part of the memory. And I am relying on every other part of my memory being accurate, not accepting that I might have deleted some of it." And I then made a generalisation, the generalisation being, I can't draw. This year, I've attended an art class, and I can tell you, I can draw. I am shocked at what I can now do. So what Miss Greenwood taught me was completely wrong, but equally, what I taught myself as a result of what Miss Greenwood taught me is what I have taken as truth for the rest of my life. So I want you to think about, what negative thoughts are you telling yourself? What negative memories have you turned into your universal truth of your life? Have you told yourself that because you've had rejections for a previous novel, that you are always going to get rejections, that there's absolutely no point in you trying? Are you telling yourself, because you didn't get a degree, or you got a degree but you didn't get a degree in English or in creative writing or whatever, are you telling yourself that you're no good because of that? What have you distorted? What have you deleted? What have you generalized with the memories you've got and created a truth that you are now proving to yourself day after day by the things that you're telling yourself? Now, this might sound like it's just a passing kind of comment, a passing episode of the podcast, but actually, this is such a crucial thing to know and understand. The things that we are telling ourselves as a universal truth are not necessarily based on truth. And one of the things we need to do is go back into our memory banks and ask ourselves, do we actually deserve to take that truth that we've given ourselves from childhood? Maybe it's something you have told yourself is a universal truth from when you were 5, 6, 7 years old. Maybe you were even younger and you've taken that as a universal truth. Maybe the person who told you that you were no good at something wasn't even qualified to tell you that. Do you actually respect the person? When you look back now, do you respect the person whose opinion you have taken to create that universal truth? So I really want you to think about those negative thoughts you've got and then go back into your memory banks to identify, what's this grounded in? Where has it come from? What's the root of these thoughts that you are having and that you are giving space in your mind? From there, we then need to move on to look at how that's turned into a belief that can actually be a limiting belief. Now, years ago, I read a book that is called The Big Leap by a man called Gay Hendricks. If you haven't read The Big Leap, you must read it, because it is one of those books that really opens our eyes and our hearts to understand where we are actually limiting our future life, our future ability to achieve something based on the belief system that we have created for ourselves. When I was younger, I used to get criticised for always being late. I have to say that part of the reason I was late was because I was usually immersed in a book. So I would be reading a book and I'd forget that my parents had told me to get myself ready for a certain time. I wasn't ready. I'd come down in my jeans. My mum had a big thing against jeans. So if we went, for example, to the dentist, we had to get dressed in our Sunday best. We were not allowed to go in our jeans. So I was always getting told off and I was always being criticised for being late. As I got a little bit older, I got even worse at being late. As I got a lot older, I got even worse at being late. I then read The Big Leap, and one of the things that Gay Hendricks talks about is how we can bend time. Now, the reality is, it's not that this is my view, it's not that we're actually bending time. Maybe we are. I'm not sure we're really bending time. We're bending our attitude around time. So he talks about time and how if you're somebody who's always late, to stop doing the stressing about being late and to accept that there's probably a good reason and something good is going to happen as a result of us being late. So I read this section in the morning one day and I knew I had to go and catch a train. You know where this is going, don't you? I was going to miss that train. And I decided, okay, let's take on board what Gay Hendricks is saying. Let's accept that we're going to be late for this train and just see what happens. So there I am walking along and I ended up bumping into somebody who I'd not seen in a while, had a great and helpful conversation, was late for the train, got to where I was going, and the other people that I was meeting, I was meeting them somewhere else, they were even later because their train was delayed. So actually, it didn't matter that I was late, that I missed my train, and I didn't have an ounce of stress. Now, I've got to say, there's a second part to this. So the next day I was travelling to London and I was actually doing the introduction of somebody onto the stage, a woman called Denise Duffield Thomas, who I absolutely adore. And it's through her that I came across the Big Leap. So Denise Duffield Thomas is the money mindset coach, and she has a huge business around a multi-million dollar business all around money mindset and has a lucky bit. Money Bootcamp. So she is the one who introduced me to this. I was the one who was going to do the welcoming her on stage for her London event that she was doing. I catch my train, get there, do my bit that I've got to do, sit in the audience, really enjoy it. But I knew that this event was going to finish at 9 o'clock and my last train from Euston was 9:06. So that meant I calculated it, based it on how long it took me to get to the hotel, and I gave myself some leeway. I had to leave the hotel at 8:30 to get to Euston in time without having to rush and without being stressed. I get out of the hotel and there were no taxis to be seen anywhere at all. Wait for a little while, still no taxis come. So I walked onto the main street and eventually I did come across a taxi. I told him how long we had until my train left Euston Station. And I can't do a brilliant Cockney accent here, folks, so forgive me. No chance, girl, that's not going to happen. So he says, I'll do my best for you. And I tell him what I'd come across in Gay Hendricks' book, The Big Leap. And he says, okay, I'll do my best. We get to Euston Station and he goes, bloody hell, girl, that should never have happened. You've still got 6 minutes till your train. So I paid him, walked to the platform, got on the train with a couple of minutes or so to spare, no stress at all. So what does that tell us? It doesn't mean that I'm going to now say to you, I want you to bend time. What it does mean, though, is I want you to experiment with changing your thinking about something that either stresses you or that you accept as a universal truth within your life and play with the alternative. What would it be like? I mean, you do this when you're writing your novel, your memoir, or your nonfiction book that you're doing. What would it be like if you thought the opposite of what you currently think? Put yourself into being a character in a new work in progress that's all about allowing yourself to think differently. What would it be like if you were actually somebody who is a brilliant writer? And I know immediately your brain has probably gone to the same place my brain went to, which is, get real, Zoe. So now we need to say, okay, we can't accept that. And maybe it's because we're overusing humility. And you know, we can retain humility. We can still be humble and we can be good at what we do. We can still be humble and we can be a good writer. We don't have to say that the humility means that now we say that we're no good. So you can be a humble person and still develop a consistent writing habit. You can be a humble person and write better today than you did yesterday, last week, last month, last year, last decade. You can be a humble person and still believe in yourself. And you can be a humble person and still learn and grow as a writer, so that you can become a better writer. You can be a humble person and you can aim for something bigger than you used to think was possible. I used to think it would be great if I could just finish writing a novel. When I finished writing a novel, I thought it would be great if I could get an agent. I was still humble about it. I wasn't arrogant going out there saying, I'm going to get me the best agent possible. Do you know what? I've got me the best agent possible. There's no doubt about it. I've retained the humility and I've aimed for something bigger than I used to think was possible. And you know, you can be a humble person and still be honest with yourself. And you can be a humble person and still protect your writing time and your space, valuing that you have a right to have time and space to do your writing. So if you did find yourself going, yeah, right, Zoe, I'm not a brilliant writer, that's a negative thinking that you have developed over time. And often it is attached to the fact that we think we have to be humble. And in being humble, we limit ourselves. And in limiting ourselves, we create beliefs around ourselves that become our universal truths. So are you up for having a bit of play this week? Are you up for playing with what your thinking is and seeing what that means, listening to the sound of the words, feeling the words in your mouth when you tell yourself that you're no good, feeling what that does to your body, hearing yourself, talking to yourself in a way that you'd never talk to somebody else ever? You wouldn't do it. You would never say to me, even if you read my book and you decide it's rubbish, I think there's a pretty high chance you won't tell me it's rubbish. You might not leave a review. You might just smile sweetly and you won't buy a second book. But you probably wouldn't say to me what you think of my novel in a way that you will tell yourself that you're no good with your writing. So play around with that alternative thinking. You may have heard on previous episodes that I've talked about the RAS, the reticular articulated, oh, I never get this quite right, system. It's a part of the brain that my brain has decided I don't know how to say it, which is like I used to decide that I didn't know my left from my right. I now tell myself, because I know about the RAS and I know how important it is to say the right things to the RAS, I told my RAS, which is this part of our brain that believes what we're telling ourselves, particularly when we tell ourselves this early in the day, even more so if it's our early thoughts, our first thoughts of the day. So I would tell myself, I don't know my left from my right. I decided, as a result again of reading The Big Leap, I decided I do know my left from my right. I went a whole lifetime until I was in my mid-50s before I would say to you, I know my left from my right. I've got to tell you though, it confused my husband. So for a good while, in fact, still sometimes now, I'm 62, so we're talking about 7 years ago. So poor Rob, I have always done this thing of we'd be going somewhere and I'd say, turn left. He'd turn left and I'd say, what did you do that for? Because you told me to turn left. No, I said right. No, you didn't, Zoe. You told me to turn left because I didn't know my left from my right. I then started to say to him, turn right. He'd turn left and I'd be going, why have you done that? Because you always say the opposite to what you mean. So my poor husband got really confused for quite a while, particularly when we'd be out cycling. We actually cycled the Way of the Roses and our training that we were doing. You've got this thing where you will shout out to the person who's behind you. So you'll shout out if there's a pothole. You'll shout out when you're at the give way part of a road that it's clear to turn out. And you shout out if you're going to turn left or you're going to turn right. And poor Rob, I'd say, turn left. I'd turn left. He'd stopped, ready to turn right and wait to check that it's clear for both directions. Poor man, got very confused by me. I now know my left from my right because I've educated my RAS, which has educated my brain, which has created a neural pathway within my brain. And I know we can do this. And I can guarantee you, you can do it too, because we now know through research that there's something called neuroplasticity of our brain. And that neuroplasticity allows us to create new neural pathways. It allows us to create new truths for ourselves. And you can create those new truths for yourself Wherever you're telling yourself that you're no good with your writing, that you don't have time, that it's all right for somebody else because they've got this, that, the other, you're in a more disadvantaged position. Do you know what? I can list dozens and dozens and dozens of writers who had really difficult times and still wrote something brilliant and got it published. You can turn things around for you, and you start by thinking about what is it you're saying about to yourself now about your writing? What was the root of that? How can you turn it around and have a play with thinking the opposite? So there you go. You can enjoy having a week of playing. And if you don't believe any of this, I have said this on a previous episode, decide as well over the next week that you are going to see Blue Butterflies. And come back and tell me. I'm on social media. I'm Zoe Richards UK. Tell me how many blue butterflies you saw in a week. I can absolutely guarantee you, you will see some of them. They may not be real butterflies. They may be pictures on the side of a lorry. It might be an advert. It might be something in a magazine. It could be a photograph. It could be anything at all. But look out for those blue butterflies. And that tells you that your brain looks out for what it expects. And that's when you'll know that what I've talked about here in today's episode is absolutely something you can use to help change your thinking about your writing. Okay, there we go. I'm going to leave you to it for now. I'll let you ponder that one. You possibly think I'm a bit of a weirdo after this episode, but honestly, this kind of thinking has changed my life. And I say that as somebody who is a suicide survivor, and I had to find a different way of thinking. So I can guarantee you, it works. Believe me. And if you don't believe me, look out for the butterflies, the blue butterflies. All right, so off you go and have some happy playing, happy writing. And I really do hope that not only the words flow for you for your writing, but those positive words flow for you in your thinking too. And I'll see you on the next episode.